Filmcore.
Hey guys, welcome to another Filmcore podcast. This time we're doing things a little bit differently. We're going to be talking about women in film. Currently, we're experiencing an awakening in the women's rights movement with massive marches and campaigns all across the globe for the equal treatment of women and girls. We're seeing people become more educated about the issues that affect women on a daily basis. Unfortunately, awareness doesn't always translate into results. And film is one of the most, if not the most, influential forms of media
that is lacking from equality,
basically since inception. So here with me today, I have Lulu, Emily, and Adora.
Hi.
Hey.
Adora's a first-timer here. Woo. We're just going to basically just like jump into like the lack of women both on screen and behind the lens and kind of how it impacts media, our society, and how our attitudes towards women and kind of the progress that women are trying to make in the future.
Right. Let's do this.
So yeah, let's get started. So a lot of what people are saying that we've made a lot of progress in film, but based on movies like just released this past year, I'm not quite sure if we really are making any substantial progress. Do you guys feel like we are, or
it looks like progress because yeah, we have all these films that are sort of geared to women now, but it's kind of I also feel like it's kind of false in the same sense, like. Take Hunger Games, for instance. That's a film starring a woman. And yeah, I felt the character was kind of flat, like the lead actress. I don't know if that was just my own opinion.
Well, actually, my...
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say my brother actually read the books and said that as a female character, Katniss Everdeen was basically more masculine and that would made her stronger. Yeah. It wasn't like her feminine traits that really made her a hero. Mm-hmm. It was basically like, you know... becoming more masculine.
Yeah, portraying herself as a man, or not portraying herself as a man. She possesses male characteristics, and she's also doesn't even have most lines in the film. Like her, she hardly speaks in that movie. Like all she does really is act like a badass, and I guess in that sense it's like pretty cool because we don't have that many badass women before that. But it's still kind of like it just seemed like it was men using the feminist movement, you know, to sell a movie, and it just seemed disingenuous for me because it wasn't like a really rich character.
Well, it's pretty ironic that you point out that because also in the movie I mean she's being used as a puppet. She isn't really, they keep saying that she's a part of this whole revolution, this movement, and she's really not. She's really a tool for like this male character
yeah.
to really gain power. So ultimately she's really not as
art reflecting as life.
Well, and it really seems too that with a lot of the films that are the big blockbusters that are coming out now, especially I mean I think the most obvious one right now is Star Wars. Both Rogue One and Force Awakens both have female leads. But, you know, and this is a discussion that I've had with a few female writers that I know, while that in itself is really great, you don't see any other women in these films. In Rogue One, yes, we get Mon Mothma, which is great. But overall, you're still looking at a movie poster where the person in the center might be a female, but she's never interacting with any other females over the course of the film. So, again, it was nice to see a few female characters interacting in Rogue One, but I'm not saying that we have to put every film up to the Bechdel test and see if it passes, but it is a step in the right direction. I'm not saying it's not, but it does seem like they have, the creators of these movies have to satiate this rabid male fan base by, if they're going to put a woman in the lead, everyone else has to be a man in it.
Yeah.
Because God forbid we have a 50-50 cast of men and women, you know, and even if we did, the male has to be a lead, you know, it's moving forward, but it's almost like a one step forward, two step back kind of deal. Again, not complaining. When I was a kid, the only woman you ever saw in these movies was Princess Leia, and usually she was, you know, having herself forced upon by Han Solo. So it's cool to see it, and it's cool to see little girls dressing up like these characters, but there's still a lot of ways to go, I think.
Well, that's a great point that you made we do get one female leading character who's awesome and a badass in her own right, but certainly she's among just a sea of other men. And actually, in most movies, in the top 500 films, only 30% of speaking characters are women. So therefore, if you put one woman in a leading role, then it gives kind of, I feel like, the studio and the movie more of an excuse to have less women throughout the film in general.
Exactly. I completely agree. I think, like,
just kind of compounding on the idea of like false progress. It's not to say, it's not to say the progress isn't happening, but I think we are getting really excited about, like, I think there's just the way that things are moving gradually and slowly towards, you know, more woman-fronted movies, and like there is this kind of very slow arc of progress happening. Like that is a great thing to see, but there's still so much inequality and so much just, you know, like I'm just referring to one set of data. It's scary how many movies you'd think are like progressive or, you know, feminist oriented, or at least like, you know, feature strong female characters, are just mm-hmm. still so imbalanced in terms of like how much women get, you know, screen time or
even what their goal is. You know, I like one of my favorite girl power movies is Run Lola Run, and the entire movie centers around her trying to save her boyfriend, you know, which she's still a badass. It's still a great film, but her entire goal revolves around a man.
Her, in that defense, like in that movie's defense, though, I think it kind of switches the damsel in distress, and it, like, it's her boyfriend now.
Let's look at movies, for example. We've seen a recent surge in basically like all female comedy ensembles, mm-hmm. Where we look at like Ghostbusters, Bridesmaids. Some can argue Mean Girls kind of was.
Yeah.
And I feel like those are also a sign of a false progress. Or even Bad Moms, for example, which was a terrible movie.
I know. I was just watching that because I was like, I need to know how bad that movie is.
Like, I think when you mentioned, like, Mila Kunis having teenage kids, like what, 35?
She's 32 years old, and she has 2 tween children.
Wow.
And again, it goes back to the humor is in them fulfilling these domestic roles. Bridesmaids, that's like, you know, like, that's such a cliche, like, every woman is part of a wedding, all you want to do is get married kind of scenario. And the humor in that.
Exactly. They always have to be a baker or some, like, inoffensive profession that can be very femme.
A flower shop lady.
Yeah, a flower shop or a bookstore or something. And another problem, I love Bridesmaids, but another problem I have with it is that, yes, you have this full female ensemble and they're all very strong and very funny. And of course you get the fat woman, Melissa McCarthy, has to be the gross, sexual predator-esque, you know, horn dog character. They're like, okay, we'll put a larger woman in this film, but it's all gonna be like she's horny and gross, and it's right. You know, it's great that she's there and that we have more sizes represented, but of course they would never put Melissa McCarthy in the lead.
Well, I have another example of another writer, director, and actress who I think is really harming the movement as far as women progressing in film, and I think that's Lena Dunham. Because she plays that card so often, you know, where it's like, oh, like, I'm empowered because look at my non-traditional body. But then again, on the same token, relies on humor based upon the way her body looks. So either it's funny or it's not funny.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean?
Yeah.
I've struggled with her so much in the past, like, I guess 5 or 6 years that Girls has been on air. I initially just found it so, like, for a couple of reasons, really hard to digest to Girls, because the first season or so, like, it's definitely like I watched it and I was interested in it because of the way that it was definitely breaking or like pushing some boundaries as far as how women and young women, 20 something women specifically, have, you know, like, not really been in the narrative, let alone, like, you know, written and, like, directed and starred in these big roles about, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, and having, and the fact that there are these scenes.
Imperfect.
Right. The fact that there are these scenes where she's, like, that appealed to me about it is, like, these are very relatable scenes, like, you know, where she's struggling with these extremely, like, millennial issues. Then, I mean, also, there's so much class issues. Obviously, she comes from an extremely privileged background. And she was pretty blind to any, like, the fact that pretty much every single person in her first season at least was white. She lives in New York. It makes no sense. She's come under a lot of fire for this. I'm definitely not the first person to say it, so I don't want to, you know, like, talk too much about that. She's definitely, like, gotten better, and I follow her on Instagram. I know that she's, like, started listening a lot more to people who criticize her about class and color and how she's kind of been like just really ignorant and tone deaf about stuff. She is a really good example of like, she's an extremely intelligent, I empathize with her in many ways, but she can be just so tone deaf, and so many people on the like, you know, more conservative side of the spectrum hate her because they feel like she symbolizes tone deaf liberal feminism, and that makes me really sad, you know, absolutely. And white feminism, and it makes me so sad because it's like she should and she shouldn't be, I think, the voice of feminism, right? Like she's white, she's privileged. I don't know. I have a problem with her dominating the conversation and being like, you know, having become this like scapegoat for people on the right and like anti-feminist people to say like, look at Lena Dunham, yeah, like, and how she's just,
they use her to make their case.
Exactly.
She's definitely one of those people that brings together the left and the right, you know, and, like mutual hatred. Her. Yeah.
The biggest problem with the show is that the relationship she portrays with her friends are incredibly toxic. And that's not to say that we haven't all been there at some point. I don't believe that women are necessarily like that. And I feel like it reinforces that stereotype that women all talk shit about each other behind their backs and they secretly hate each other and they're very catty.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, which is why I liked Girls at first too, because I felt like I could relate to it. But then, you know, and I know we're going to talk about TV later, so I won't go, I'm definitely going to talk about it then, but that's why Broad City was my answer to what Girls needed to be. Because Broad City,
yes,
centers around a very positive, supportive female relationship. And when I saw that show, I was like, that's what Girls was missing for me, was the positive, supportive, good, beautiful, lovely friendship that women can have. And my problem with Girls is, men watch it, women watch it, whoever, and not only does the right or whoever, any conservatives, want to use Girls as an example to say, look at these lazy millennials, look what assholes they are, look at these women, they're shitty towards each other, you know, people will watch that and be like, see, women are crazy, women are bitches, whatever.
If you take the two lead female characters in Broad City, Abby and Alana, they are also flawed. They're lazy, they're not, I mean, well, Abby's not lazy, but Alana's lazy and disorganized. But at the end of the day, they try to be reflective in some aspects and actually are still good people. And it's good to see that people, that women, we are flawed. No one's going to be perfect. We can be...
All those stories, you know, we can't start like nitpicking which stories are...
No,
like...
but all I'm saying is when you have an underrepresented or you have entire half of the world that hasn't had an opportunity to tell stories about themselves... There, you run a risk with stories like Girls. I love it. I'm not saying it's bad. It has its merits. But my problem with Girls is that it portrays a very negative side that people can, again, use, just like they use Lena Dunham to make their points about, you know, whitewashed liberal feminism.
It would be much less harmful if we had more representation across the board. That's the issue. The issue is that there's only, like, 5 shows, and one of them makes us look really bad. So it's like, damn it.
Yeah.
Well, to that point, aside from being on screen, there are not enough women behind the scenes, like directors, producers, and writers. Have you guys ever worked on set? Or do you guys have any experience working in film in any capacity? And do you guys feel like you've seen other women in these spaces? How do we get more women into these roles?
So I will chip in here. I have pretty brief and limited experience on set, but I have like worked as a PA on a couple of different like TV and film projects in the past couple of years. Actually, most recently with FilmCore's creator, Alex Kirschenbaum, and his friend who was also a woman of color. And she, when I worked with them, the two of them, I wasn't amazed. I don't want to say that like, oh my God, I was so shocked at how capable she was, but I was like really impressed with how capable this woman was in her role, which is a you know, very technical.
What was her technical role? What did she do?
She was pretty much running. I mean, she was doing like all of the sound, basically like working hand in hand with Alex, do the entire thing, like to film it. I have a lot of friends too, who are female, who work behind the scenes in like directing and editing and just in film. Prop styling, all that stuff. They are incredibly capable. Like, it's not an issue of competence. There's just so many barriers, I think, that are purely psychological, that kind of are rooted in when we're, you know, girls, that, you know, the things that we should stay away from, are anything technical or mechanical, or where we have to use our hands, or where we have to use a computer.
Yeah.
Or I have to chip in here as somebody who works in this industry, creative.
Oh, just a quick add-on to that technical really quick. I will say a big issue is the fact with, just as you mentioned, a lot of industries work with a lot of union workers. And in order to get into the unions, you have to fulfill a certain amount of hours. And then oftentimes you'll get passed over for jobs because you aren't in the union. Well, the union is incredibly male dominated. So if you can't get into the boys club, you can't get the jobs anyway. Like you just aren't allowed. You can't get the work. So, I mean, a lot of that comes from, again, the idea that, oh, you can't be a grip because you can't somehow carry the same 20 pounds of cables that this other guy can take.
But do you really think that makes a difference? Like, if there were more people doing, you know, these technical stuff and not, like, if there were more women writers?
Well, that's the issue that often... Well, the thing is, I think that also comes down to studio influence. It's been proven that actually, increasingly over the years, a lot more independent films are now written, produced, directed, you know, and basically created by women. But what really happens is once we get to the studio level, the studio has a lot of control and they believe that, oh, a film should look like this, sound like this. These are kind of people that should be in it, you know, male or female. And that's where the bigger issue is coming, because those films are the ones that, you know, make $50 million their opening weekend. These are the ones that everyone sees, you know?
Yeah, and I have to add to that because in my research when we were preparing for this, one thing that really stood out to me was, you know, I've noticed, and I'm sure you have as well, with these giant blockbusters that keep coming out, the Marvels, the DCs, the franchise films, they're handing these movies over to male directors that have maybe directed one feature. And it seems to be, and it's not to say that these men aren't talented or that they won't kill it when they get there. But one thing that really stood out to me was, so you've got one of the producers on Rogue One was this badass producer, Kathleen Kennedy. Her name comes up fairly often when you're citing really powerful women in Hollywood. And she herself said she doesn't see a woman directing a Star Wars film anytime soon because they want someone with experience. And this really, really, really stood out to me because this is a woman in one of the highest positions you can achieve in Hollywood saying that she can't imagine a female directing a Star Wars film because they want someone with experience, which is absolutely ridiculous because some of the men they're putting on these features to direct have never directed a feature before in their lives. And so, you know, my inclination in the past was to say, you know, because part of the question you asked was, how do we get more women in these spaces? And I think the problem is that we have, basically, you have a white dude in a baseball cap looking at another white dude in a baseball cap and saying, you remind me of me. Here he is to a $500,000 feature. You don't have women in these positions looking at other women in these positions and saying the same thing. And it's such a lot of women even themselves believe this, like Kathleen Kennedy, which it blew me away when I found this article where she said this, you know. So I think that's the big question is, how do we get more women into these spaces? And it's gonna, I think a lot of it's gonna rely on women insisting, and intersectionally too, I have to say, because white women helping white women ain't gonna cut it anymore.
Yes,
but we need other men to do this too. Because if we don't try to, like, help them understand or, you know, and I think that a lot of younger men are starting to understand this. A lot of them want to include women. I've talked to a lot of men in all areas of the workplace, whether it's film or not, that say, I love hiring women. I make a point to hire women when I can, you know. I think it's gonna mean all hands on deck.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if that's going to happen. It's like a pipe dream, but it's the only way we're going to do it because, you know, I do work on set. That's what I do. I'm a producer and I work in advertising. And, you know, there is a stereotype that women have to constantly, we have to be breaking it. Women don't see other women doing it. They don't think they can. Doesn't matter. We still have to do it. Even, you know, I used to work for someone, I won't say who, and I asked him why we didn't represent any female directors at the time. And this is someone who is not a white male, who's told me that the reason that we didn't represent any female directors was because they're either, every female director he had ever met was either too nice or too bitchy. Mm-hmm. And I had to sit down and try to explain to him, if you have that mentality, you're going to walk on set and that woman is going to fall into either side because she's already lost the battle of trying to show you how capable she is. A man has a breakdown on set. If he cried, if the director of a commercial cries, he's brave. If a female director did that, she would be vilified. She would never get hired again. Showing emotion is a weakness in a woman and a man. It's not going to kill. I mean, look at Mel Gibson got nominated for an Oscar this year.
Oh, my God. After
getting recorded. Like, because do you think if a woman ever did that, do you think she would ever be in the position he's in? Except for maybe Britney Spears, but she's not in Hollywood. She's a singer. But I sat down with this person who said this, and I tried to explain it from his perspective because he's a black man, and I tried to explain it from the perspective of race instead of gender, and we came out on the other end with him understanding why a statement like that was very toxic to bringing more women into this industry. We have a long way to go, but if we continue to be open and try to like come at people from this understanding, I think that's going to get more women on set, and I think it's working.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's see. Aside from films, how do you guys think that maybe TV shows and other long forms of media like Netflix and web series are changing the game? Because we have a huge issue with like these big budget like superhero movies, franchise movies that are being made, but it seems that smaller straight to web form series are really giving people new opportunities to tell different kinds of stories.
The best Netflix web series is Leslie Jones, right? The Marvel superhero that suffered from...
Jessica Jones.
Oh, my God.
Not Leslie Jones. I wish Leslie Jones had been Jessica Jones. That would have been crazy.
I would have watched the shit out of that.
That show is awesome. It talks about... It's a female character talking about PTSD in this, like, superhero world. It brings in both worlds of, like... It can be an action-packed show, but also talk about this, like, female experience that a lot of... Unfortunately, a lot of women happen to know, which is like what happens after leaving an abusive relationship. And
I will say this. I do think Jessica Jones is very progressive. I think because she actually gets, you know, to stand up to her abuser. Mm-hmm. I am simultaneously really tired of that being a narrative, though. I think we should stop. The thing is, I think what we do too much is in some ways we acknowledge that the abuse was not okay, but then we also somehow normalize it with her ability to cope with it and confront it. I think abuse, especially sexual abuse against women, is such a big issue around globally that I feel like I'm tired of it being used as a trope or as a crutch in writing. Like, I know the character was written that way. It's a Marvel character. Like, they didn't just write it. Actually part of her narrative. But I really actually liked her best friend a lot because her best friend didn't have any powers but was still brave and didn't really face the same...
Yeah, her best friend was awesome.
The same kind of abuse that Jessica did.
But that's good too because you have like the balance. And you know, I feel like Marvel, by its very nature, their characters always are, you know, have some sort of trauma. I guess it would make sense, especially in the comic book world where it seems like every damn female character has been raped at some point. At least she's in control of her own narrative. So
yeah, and I feel like if everything's, you know, like that too, like I feel like it's just Marvel's go-to. They kind of use these well-known traumas, like Luke Cage, prison. You know, like I don't think, you know, I think that narrative is pretty beaten up already.
And also, I mean, like, I'm just thinking about, like, Game of Thrones as well. It's come under a lot of fire for just how many freaking rape scenes are in it, and like how they're not really even used, like the way that they're utilized in the show kind of mindlessly and almost just for like
it doesn't advance
the narrative. It's just like, you know, shock value, exactly. And it's very disrespectful to women who are survivors. And I just, like, I think, you know, without going...
That's a problem.
Totally.
That I think is more of a problem when it is used something like, we're trying to be edgy. Like, we're just going to
exploiting... exactly.
Jessica Jones is a little different because it came from a surviving point of view. But I also see it might be a problem because it also talks about, like, victimization and like how that's probably it. Like, is that the only story we have for women is like portrayed in like a victim role?
Yeah. I'd say overall exactly. The step forward, but it's like problematic. I mean, that seems to be the theme of so many different movies and TV.
But yeah, isn't that like everything though in stories? I don't know. I guess like somebody has to overcome something and
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, that is. that's just, you know, the arc.
Yeah.
I feel like Netflix and Hulu are really creating stories that wouldn't be made otherwise. I think that's awesome. I don't know if you guys saw like the OA.
I would love to talk about the OA. I wrote a whole thing.
That's
about
something
it.
That would never be a
or
major
Orange
movie.
Is the New Black. I mean, you know, it's exactly. Funny because I think that, you know, why things like Netflix or Hulu or just on web content are changing the game is because the internet is very populist and there's an opportunity for everyone to have their platform, whether or not it's good or bad or whatever. But I think that the fact that now it's like a very democratic. It's becoming a more of a democratic, you know, for decades and decades, you just basically, you were told to consume the media that you were told to consume. That was it. Everyone watched the same TV, listened to the same music, and then you start to get this breakdown and people get to start to have a say in what they want to consume. So you've got, you know, like, for example, I mentioned it before, I'll mention it again, I'll mention it forever, Broad City, which was a web series with zero budget, but a very solid comedic team. And funny scenarios. So it didn't matter how shitty it was made. So one day, another woman saw that web series and said, here's a bunch of money. And now we have a very successful show, very popular, that people like you or me can watch, men, women, whoever. It's very intersectional. And, you know, and that wouldn't have happened because for years you had white men controlling everything and saying, nobody wants to watch that. You can't market that. No one's going to want to see a movie with two female stoners in the leads where they're putting weed in their pussy in, like, the second episode.
Well, the same thing actually happened with Insecure.
Oh, my God.
That,
so good.
The creator of that show, she actually had her own web series.
Yep, Awkward Black Girl. Yeah. And again, so people are voting. They're saying, this is what I want. I will watch it. I will support this. And you don't have that in studio. Well, I mean, I guess you do because people go to see the movies. But the TV is, like, circumventing
I think that the real thing is here that things like Netflix and Hulu or web series or YouTube, for example, there's such a low-risk environment where if you make a Hollywood film, you're putting millions of dollars into it. You want to go for a sure thing. You want that return on your investment. But we're proving that they don't really know what people want because clearly we want shows like that. It isn't about the budget. It's about the content.
So what's this OA? Can you talk about this? Because I have not heard of this.
Talk a little bit about it. I wanted to say as well, just kind of like piggybacking off of what everyone else has said, like I was just thinking like Netflix is such an amazing space for women and people of color and women of color right now because again like there's a much lower risk in terms of like, you know, creative agency and creative control. Like people really have so much more agency, women have so much more agency to like really put out exactly what it is that they want. Without having as much, you know, like from the top down. I really do think it was a great year for women in TV series. The OA is an example, one of many of it I'd like to list, but I'll be quick about the listing. But Britt Marling is my heroine. She co-wrote the series with a man whose last name has the word Batman in it, something that my boyfriend really is excited about. But she is amazing because she woman goes missing and she comes back to her home in the very first episode and it's just very mysterious like how she you know so she's the whole background story is that she was blind before and then she somehow has her sight back and she was like held in captivity and like the whole show kind of unfolds to explain this really amazing story very inventive like very bold. Takes a lot of risks, and I'm saying risks in that, like, it kind of goes between the fantasy and sci-fi realm and, like, this very real, earthbound story. I love it for so many reasons, but the fact that she had so much ownership over it, that Britt Marling had so much ownership, like, she's said in interviews that she doesn't think this could have been put out even just 3 years ago, just because of, you know, the nature of the TV series landscape back then.
And I agree. I think like there's been a movement in, and it's been perpetuated by shows kind of like Orange is the New Black by Broad City, that there are women and men out there who like love these shows that women clearly have ownership over. And people will watch them because they're good. Like they're just good. And I think so many things that have also held women's, you know, like creative ownership back is that a lot of people will say like, well, it's just not funny, or like women aren't funny, or like women can't be funny, or women can't be as creative as men. Women can't be as daring as men. And it's like, we're showing now that we can be, we always have been, but like, we, I think have been kind of feeding off each other's energy, mm-hmm. of like pushing boundaries and going, you know, into territory that's inventive and innovative and super creative and our own. Another example that I know like doesn't really fall into like TV series or like extended web series territory, but Lemonade. First of all, Lemonade, oh, yeah. Like, oh my God. I mean, it's everything. Like it's incredible. It's this epic, wonderfully, you know, executed in terms of like visual and you know, song, like the songs are so bold and so innovative. And like, it's all women of color. I just want to say like Stranger Things is one of my favorite shows to come out in the past year. And one of the main stars of it is an 11-year-old girl with a shaved head. And she's like the heroine of it. So that's pretty huge. People love Stranger Things.
Yeah, but can I throw in a devil's advocate comment about Stranger Things?
Yes, you're agreeing
okay,
too much.
Okay. First of all, the little girl in the lead basically doesn't talk, and every other woman in that film, everything she does is in relation to a male. And that I love Stranger Things. I think the aesthetic is great, and I watched it and I love it. But, you know, you have Winona Ryder, who is basically just a wreck, worried about her son the whole time, which makes sense. It makes sense for her character. And then the only other woman you have is basically I can't remember her name right now, but the perfect
Nancy, eight. The sister.
Well, Nancy, and then her friend who dies and nobody gives a shit.
Barb.
Poor Barb.
Everybody gave a shit.
Well, everybody real life.
Barb wasn't the hot one, okay?
Yeah, so whatever. I guess it's fine.
Barb is a hot one. If Nancy died, they'd be draining every fucking swamp. Yeah,
you know they would. And then you've got Nancy, who's, you know, again, shows a little bit more autonomy towards the end. We're making progress. But, like, the female characters are nowhere near as nuanced and fleshed out as the male characters on that show, and I wanted more. Like, you get this whole backstory with the sheriff, and he's such a, like, conflicted character with all this different stuff going on. Well, I want to know more about Nancy. I want to know more about Winona Ryder's character. You know, like, these are opportunities to flesh out the female characters in this cast. And you just don't really get much of that, and it's kind of disappointing. When you're getting these beautiful character arcs.
I agree and I don't agree.
I think a really good show that's making a lot of strides is Transparent. Well, yeah. It's an obvious one, but right? Has everybody seen Transparent?
Yep,
I watched the first.
I actually have not seen Transparent.
Oh, it's all about smashing the patriarchy, ladies. It's all about that. Like, you got to watch it.
Amazing.
Yeah, it has I forgot to write his name down, but it has that
Jeffrey Tambor.
Jeffrey Tambor. And yeah, he plays a trans woman. Yeah.
Trans woman.
Oh my God. Sorry, my brain is not.
While we're talking about kind of our favorite TV shows, do you guys also have like any some of your favorite like pro woman movies you want to throw out as well? Like for example, mine is Edge of Tomorrow, because Emily Blunt is a badass in that movie, and really nothing about her character revolves around another male. She just is out there kicking ass, and it's awesome. Yeah, she plays opposite Tom Cruise, and basically Tom Cruise is essentially infected with this alien blood that every time he dies, the day resets.
Wait, she figures it out.
And, yeah.
Wow. Like, it was like, I want to watch it. And then I was like,
it's really good. Emily Blunt is super strong. Like, she is the hero of the movie. I mean, Tom Cruise is obviously the hero also, but he wouldn't have, without her, there would be no Tom Cruise.
Good to know.
So I think that's a another great one. Also, Mad Max Fury Road.
So good. Really good.
That was second on my list. I had a list of like 12 movies that I love that are pro-woman, and that was number two.
Not a huge like men's conservative group was protesting it actively.
You know it's a good movie if conservative men are protesting it. Jesus.
Yeah.
It's God.
Just, yeah, that's how you know you've made it as a woman. I love it.
That was crazy.
Really quick, I want to. Can I talk about a couple other? I know this is like we try to move on to movies, but can I just mention really quick about TV because this is something that like I think was probably my number one favorite series to come out last year that also really like was very daring and brave. Lady Dynamite. So Maria Bamford is like 47 now, and she definitely makes commentary like all throughout the show about how like there's one line where she's like, what a great late in life opportunity to even like get her own show. And I think that it's like she's commenting on, you know, like the fact that women after a certain age like become so much less desirable to Hollywood after are only, you know, being very used narrowly in their, I guess, more like wanted years, right? And so I just wanted to make a comment on that.
Not only that, she has bipolar. Yeah, she's bipolar. Yeah, I think she's just bipolar, right?
She's bipolar and she has OCD and, like, intrusive thoughts. And so she's pushing the envelope in more ways than one. Like, she's, you know, she's female, older female, also, like, a comedian, and has mental illness. And she comments on all of those things. And, like, it's just an incredible show. It's so well done.
Yeah, it really brings a new perspective. Like, that's what we need. It's like having more points of view. Like, girls wouldn't be so problematic if we had five other shows that show different women, you know, being different. And that's the issue that we have is, like, we just need more stories and, I think, more female writers to give us
those stories. Keep insisting. I like that you used the word insist, Adora, like, earlier. I think that's just so essential. But, okay, back to movies. Erin Brockovich, one of my favorite movies from back in the day. Bend It Like Beckham, which I watched when I was like in middle school, and I loved.
Middle school, Keira Knightley.
Yeah,
I love that movie.
So that movie, we need more of that. Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants and Clueless, because oh, and Legally Blonde. I mean, like those are all like definitely problematic movies in certain ways, but like, but the fact that they're like, you know, from 10 plus years ago kind of goes to show that like we've been making certain steps forward for many years, I think, since like about like the mid 90s is when it kind of like really started moving, like around Clueless time, like in having these more female dominated stories with strong women who possess both, you know, like maybe traditionally masculine but also feminine characteristics and still are just like,
and it add depth to that valley girl stereotype.
No, it definitely did. I think that's what we loved about Cher is that she was definitely a valley girl, but a valley girl with a heart of gold.
Totally. She meant well. Give me those stereotypes, you know? Like, give me, like, those typical stereotypes and then, like, flesh it out and make a whole movie around that. Like,
Elle Woods
like
too.
That's, you know, like, I'm okay when it's aware like that, when movies are aware with that, like, kind of, like, Legally Blonde.
Like, you can be a beautiful woman who loves, you know, putting on heels or whatever and fashion and still be fucking intelligent. Like, there's so many people who still have trouble, especially men, wrapping their heads around that, like, these things are not mutually exclusive. You can be smart and beautiful.
Also, I think what's really important in movies like that is, like, where these women still have power but don't have to be, like, masculine or be bitchy. She can just be nice. And, like, that's it.
I think
there is no...
It's funny because, like, I feel like when you know when a guy writes what he perceives as a powerful or a strong female character because she's always dumb in ways like... And I don't mean dumb like bubblegum chewing dumb, but one of the ones that drove me the craziest was True Blood, where they're like, oh, strong female characters. And I'm like, those women got abused so much. And I'm sorry, but rejecting help doesn't mean you're... And doing things on your own foolishly does not mean you are a smart woman. It means you're foolish for rejecting help when you know you need it. A smart person knows when to ask for help, and nothing has always driven me crazy more than they make shorthand, like a prince, like the prince will run into the princess and be like, hey, do you need help getting a town? And she'll be like, no, because I'm a strong, independent woman who likes horses. I don't need your help. You know? And it's like, no, that's not what it's about. It's about complexity. You know, it's about, it reminds me of, like, you were saying, you mentioned Lulu, give me a stereotype and then flesh it out. Did any of you see Ruby Sparks?
Yes.
Where the guy, he basically writes, he creates and brings to life a manic pixie dream girl.
Yeah, I love that movie.
And, like, understands that she's a human and not a person that comes into his life to change it. So, recommend if you want to something like that.
Cool. I just wrote that down. Thank you for the recommendation.
Yeah. I hate going back to TV because I've just been more impressed with television than with movies lately. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, is that just me? Like,
I love that show.
Yeah, that show is great. She's also writing, directing, and she started off on YouTube just like Broad City, the Broad City gals, and Iza.
And that's a great show because it does, it again takes a stereotype, and I wouldn't even say necessarily subverts it, but it turns it in a way that you really feel for this woman, and you don't end up thinking she's that crazy. You're just more like embarrassed for her sometimes when she's a little foolish, but you really appreciate this girl when you could write her off as a crazy ex-girlfriend, but she's not. She's a fully realized character with a lot of issues that stem not just from, you know, chasing this guy, but, you know, it goes deeper than that, and you understand that as the show goes on.
Yeah, and maybe it goes deeper than father issues, but it just gives you like a slice of life of what it means to be that. And I think that's the issue with a lot of movies and TV shows. Like, you showed me that article, Adora, The Sorority Girl.
Yeah, Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising.
And the article was saying how they just become mouthpieces for for these agendas, yeah. And they can never be in on the joke. And that's something that is true, you know, like, in stories, we're often there to either teach somebody a lesson, you know, like a guy a lesson about, like, how to be a good, decent person. And that's tiring narrative in itself. Yeah. And, like, I'm fucking tired of that. Like,
I'm not here to teach. I'm not here to teach you about your life. I'm here to live mine.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And show, so yeah, I want to see those lives.
Yeah.
I don't think we're there yet at all.
Can I touch on a film that's really stood out to me recently that almost kind of swings so far in the opposite? Have any of you seen The Love Witch?
No.
Oh my God. It is so interesting. And the reason it's really stood out to me, maybe not necessarily as it has not stood out to me as it's hard to explain. So basically, it's first of all, written, directed, and art directed by the same woman who purposely made it in the style of kind of, you know, it looks very much like it's from the 1970s. It very much plays on those kind of exploitive, very sexy, porny 70s kind of flicks, very exploitive. And it's this woman who starts to understand her power. She can use these sex magic powers as a witch to seduce various men. But of course it goes wrong because she eventually starts, what she'll find is that she uses these magic to seduce these men and they just become blubbering grovelers, and she's disgusted by this and disgusted by the fact that they don't love her for who she is, but rather are obsessed with the way she looks, but they and the way she acts, and they worship her, but she becomes angry with them when they don't love her for being herself. And it's a very interesting film because it touches on all these themes of what women mean to men and what women want from men, or what they're perceived to want by society. Because, you know, it is, the entire movie centers around this woman trying to find love. But it kind of flips the narrative where she ends up. So it completely centers around men, which is, you know, I can find problematic. But it's making this comment on women's value and what they, you know, what she, like, she's using her magic for something like this.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to check it out.
I'd love to make a recommendation too, just because we're talking about kind of things that we want to see. And I've already written down like Ruby Sparks and The Edge of Tomorrow and Love Witch as things I have to see. But has anyone seen, I know Lulu has seen, Hidden Figures, which just came out last month.
Yes.
Amazing film. literally both me and Lulu were in tears at like the first 5 minutes of watching. Just because I was just so excited about like just seeing, I mean, I was really moved by the film. What's so amazing about it, I mean, of course, like it's telling an essential story. It's pretty much like right up my alley because I've been like, I studied teaching of history and secondary education, with a focus in history and social studies, with like the main point being the main reason why, you know, I chose that profession is to teach upcoming or future generations about these untold narratives in which people of color, are the stars, you know, are the people running the show, are the people behind the scenes making things happen or moving things forward. So what I think is so amazing that this has become, you know, such a big movie and is being talked about so much is, you know, it's women of color who are insisting upon being heard. Like the women in the movie experience a lot of pushback constantly from white people, both men and women. Telling them this is not their place, or like they can't be co-authored on a paper or something when they're doing, you know, 100% of the work. And they really, like, I just loved how the characters are so insistent on like, no, you're going to give me my say. And this is, you know, like I'm doing the work. I'm putting in so many hours. I'm intelligent. I'm worthy. And I just like really, really loved that.
So we've talked a lot about, the lack of diversity in film and in media and kind of what has been the result of that. Do you guys have any kind of insight as to what would be the solution? Adora, I know you talked about it earlier. You touched on it, how we need more men advocating for more women. It can't just be this one-sided fight. We need everyone to kind of come together and say that diversity is just, it makes it stronger. It makes the projects better. It gives more perspective. It makes the stories richer.
Diversity, yeah,
absolutely. We need a channel. I think what happened that I love, I'm thinking of just like a recent event in history, the Women's March. Like I love that there were so many men out in the streets supporting women. I'd never seen anything like it in my life or felt anything like that in my life, and I think that's the kind of spirit that we need to bring to film and to art in general, but especially film.
I think we need more women writers. You know, like the problem with Bad Moms and like movies like Neighbors 2 is that they're written by men. We need more female writers, and because like movies such as Bad Moms, that's about moms, they were written by two men.
Well, you know, it's going back to that article about sorority or the Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising. They did say in the article how the writers of the film were sending the script to, you know, they actually cited specifically sending the script to Lena Dunham and other women to make sure that there was nothing in it that was offensive. And they even, at the very end, brought on a couple of female writers on set to punch up the jokes. And I'm like, maybe just have a female co-write the script or write the script, you know? I know, crazy ideas here, but that's the kind of stuff that when I read that, I was just so curious.
It's like, why make this project and then bring in people to clean up a mess? Why not just have people there at the beginning?
Why don't you just hire a really solid female writer to write the script?
Yeah.
So many men, I think, kind of see, if they see that, like, it's a female-owned or directed or created project, or they're, like, women are, you know, in, like, the front seat, so to speak, or, like, driving the show, that they assume it's going to be like all about women's issues or like all about, you know, like very niche women's particular issues, which I think is like a problematic because, okay, yeah, it's absolutely fine for us to have movies that are about women's issues and gender and like, you know, addressing these things. Like that should be there. But also like we can still have, you know, movies that aren't necessarily focused on women's issues or gender that are women piloted, right? Like we can have narratives that are maybe like horror movies or even action films, like they can still have women in the driver's seat, and, you know, kind of like from the inside, making it, I think, a more interesting or like richer story. And like calling out when there's like a flat female character or when there's like not enough, you know, female to female dialogue, or like helping make sure that the movie is just written from a female perspective. And like, yes, I think we need to have both, right? We need to have like both more female stories that are about women and that focus on women and the relationship to men and like how women are seen and kind of subverting stereotypes, but also like, I guess just movies that are more generally or just like about different topics, right? It's just, there needs to be more women in the industry and like across the board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just give us jobs.
Well, thank you guys so much for jumping on this podcast with me. I definitely want to continue to do more talks about like diversity in media. I didn't want to this conversation to be really about women of color in film because I think this is a whole nother discussion. It's kind of hard to tackle all of these issues at once, and I think this is a pretty expansive issue that isn't just make the it. I just never mind. So to approach it from a very broad standpoint first. Okay. Well,
all right.
Thanks. Bye. Thank you. Bye. Okay. Bye, everybody. Bye.